commuters with eye-watering fare hikes today after suffering 12 months of delays, cancellations, and poor service. McDonald's is testing the use of fresh beef in another burger, the latest move by the fast food chain to swap out frozen beef as it seeks to improve its image. The company says the new burger called Arch Burger is being tested in 7 McDonald's restaurants in Tulsa, Oklahoma. More on these stories at townhall.com.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome to We're a Little Behind. I'm Chris Gomez.
And I'm Jen Gomez.
And we are going to be having a fun show today.
Yeah, it is.
Usually we talk about all the things that we love. And today, we're talking about movies that are just terrible.
Bad movies. You know, bad movies are one of my favorite subjects. They really, really are. Because they're so fun to talk about and rip apart.
And today, we're going to have 3 good examples of really bad movies.
And they're so bad. I'm not going to say they're so bad they're good, because they're not good by any stretch of the imagination. But they're so bad, they're fun. Yes.
The first one we're going to talk about is The Room,
mm-hmm,
by Tommy Wiseau. And it is now the subject of a movie coming out next month called The Disaster Artist.
Which looks amazing. Like, legitimately amazing. It looks like a good movie.
The next one we're going to talk about is the original Wicker Man. Now, the remake of The Wicker Man was done with Nicolas Cage.
Which is not good.
And it doesn't, but it doesn't deserve our time.
Yes.
We're talking about the original. And then we're going to end this where we're talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the Michael Bay produced version.
Yes.
And this one gets me angry and gets me on a tangent. So once we start, and in fact, I automatically want to word vomit out every single problem I have with this. Well, I'm not, because we're going to talk about The Room first. And we're actually going to have quite a few special guests today. We will have, carried over from last episode, we have Kevin Shoemaker.
Hello.
And Chelsea Dwinell.
Hi.
And we will actually be getting, for the next segment, which will be The Wicker Man, we're going to be having one of my very best friends, Vienna Montague.
Mm-hmm.
I would say me and her bonded over this movie in our mutual hatred.
There's nothing quite like sheer hatred.
My one problem with doing this is that I can't pace.
Mm-hmm.
Because now I'm behind the microphone, I'm sitting in a chair, I can't pace. When I start talking about these, I need to get up and start pacing because I'm so frenetic about how much I hate these movies.
It is quite the sight.
So we thought we'd blend this in kind of nicely. Since we're going to start with The Room, we don't hate it for the reasons that you would hate these other 2 movies. This one, we kind of love how bad it is.
Yes, it is entertainment, just pure and simple.
So we watched this movie at the time of recording the show. We watched it last night.
Yes. So the movie came out in 2003.
And it is written, directed, starring, and altogether somehow financed by Tommy Wiseau.
Right.
The guy who starred in it, Greg, his name's Greg. He plays Mark.
Greg Sestero, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He plays Mark. And he wrote a memoirs of the making of this movie. And then it was turned into a screenplay and directed and starring James Franco. And that comes out next month. We'll have links to the trailers for these movies so you can see them.
Absolutely.
But this movie is so bad. Now, Kevin, you have mentioned this years ago. I remember, I think, must be about... I think 2008. So it's been almost 9 years since you brought this to our attention. And you're saying, oh, yeah, it's the worst movie ever. Now, I assumed from The Room, because The Room title sounds like a horror movie to me. Like, you know, The Cell or The Box.
It's an understandable premise. I mean, The Room, it sounds very auspicious. But
yeah.
In actuality, it's... boy, it's a cluster. That's all it is.
And what it is, do you have the synopsis?
I do. So, Johnny is a successful banker who lives happily in a San Francisco townhouse with his fiancée, Lisa. One day, she gets bored with him and decides to seduce his best friend, Mark. From there, nothing will be the same again. Which, I'd like to point out that while the description of The Room has the word fiancée, Tommy Wiseau does not know that word. Because throughout the movie...
The word fiancée is never used.
The word fiancée is never used. It is either future husband or future wife.
Lisa, you are my future wife. You must respect me.
Exactly.
And by the way, that's not a dumb affectation on my part. That's literally how Johnny, the main character, talks.
That's a pretty spot-on impersonation.
I've had, like, 10 years to work on it. I've been practicing the scenes more often than it is actually reasonable for me to be doing so.
So this movie was starring Tommy Wiseau, who could not get work, but he wanted to be an actor. And so he wrote, directed, and, like I said, somehow financed, and which I'm from the trailers for The Disaster Artist, seems like he's very shady about where this money comes from.
There's rumors that there was organized crime backing the movie. Of course, this hasn't been proven, and those are just rumors. But how do you get $5 million to make a movie, you know, on the up and up?
It's probably further explained in the actual book, The Disaster Artist, by Greg Sestero and the other gentleman that helped produce it. But yeah, it's, wow. Where anyone managed to get any kind of funding is beyond me.
And the thing about it is that this movie, from start to finish, does not care about itself.
And not at all.
Like, doesn't care about anyone or anything.
No, there is so many plot points that are never explained, characters that are brought in without any introduction. Like, I'm sorry, I don't like a lot of exposition in my movies. However, at some point, I need to know who you are if you walk into a room and just start having sex and then never show up again.
Which is a rather prominent feature of one of the scenes of the film. It's like a 10-minute long sequence where just randomly a couple walks into the house, proceed to have sex, and then the main character's fiancé, or should I say future wife, walks in with her mother and catches them. And there's no point to this scene. There is no involvement in the story with those characters outside of the gentleman of the scene falling over and hitting some trash cans later on.
It is a segment that is led up just so the mom can say that she has breast cancer.
And then never mentioned again.
And she doesn't even say it like, think you would. Like,
sweetie, I have some bad news for you. You know, it's...
Well, what is it?
Well, I got my test results today. I definitely have breast cancer. That's the tone. That's not how anyone talks.
That's not even. No, I'm gonna argue a little bit with you. That's less callous than what she did. So, like, with most people, it'd be like, you know, I have some bad news. I have breast cancer. I'm tired. I have a lot of things I need to do. And you know what? I definitely have breast cancer, but you should marry Tommy. I'm like, what is going on? So the mom, her mom, who's in there she's in there for like 7 different scenes, and each one is to reiterate how her daughter is never going to have a career, never going to be able to support herself, so she has to marry this weird guy who talks funny.
Right, because he has a career, and she obviously cannot make, she doesn't work, she can't support herself, so she really needs to marry Johnny. You need to marry Johnny. But mom, I don't love Johnny, but you need to marry Johnny. You need to think about your future. Marriage isn't about love. And honestly, this happens 7 times.
It has no concept of time. It has no concept of character insertion. It has nothing of that. And in fact, this right here is a prime example. This is an entire scene of him going to get roses. I'm sorry. At some point, it takes a little bit longer. Now, we've talked about, I don't think we've talked about, but we will be talking about at some point, the TV show 24.
Yes.
How does somebody get through an entire day, you know, in L.A. with traffic? Stuff takes a while. If Jack Bauer lived in Tommy Wiseau's world, this explains how Jack Bauer can get to and from anywhere in Los Angeles within 5 minutes. Because this is an entire scene at a florist.
Hi.
Can I help you?
Yeah, can I have a dozen red roses, please?
Oh, hi, Johnny. I didn't know it was you. Here you go.
That's me. How much is it?
It'll be $18.
Here you go. Keep the change. Hi, doggy.
You're my favorite customer.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Bye-bye.
That's the entire scene.
That's the entire scene.
I didn't speed it up. I didn't anything. That is the scene.
So there's a pug sitting on the counter for those, you know, wondering
why he says, oh, hi, doggy.
Hi, doggy. This movie gets frustrating to watch at times because the lips do not match the voices.
No.
Whoever
was in charge of the ADR was just bungling it up.
You had one job.
Yeah. The dialogue, too. Do you know that everyone that comes into a room is addressed? Every single person is addressed. Somehow we don't get exposition of who they are, but we do know their names because every time anyone enters the room, it's always, oh, hi, name. So it's, oh, hi, Mark. Oh, hi, Lisa. Oh, hi, doggy. It's, oh, hi, name.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, we find out that Lisa's mother has breast cancer before we find out her name, because she's never properly introduced. It's only after the fact someone goes, oh, yeah, Claudette was here and blah, blah, blah.
Is that her name?
That's her name, Claudette.
Thank you for telling me that, because I watched the entire movie, did not get that.
Oh, well, I'm happy to pick up on that. By the way, I would like to make sure that everyone at home knows, this is the one that we actually like.
Yeah,
this is
true.
This is how much vitriol, you don't even know what you're stepping into with this.
Tommy Wiseau has delivery in his accent, and oh my gosh, like this is from the movie.
You are tearing me apart, Lisa!
And honestly, that reaction is to nothing. So she's sitting on the couch, and she's talking to her friend who earlier came into the room, had sex, and then left, and that was it. But so Lisa tells her that she's not in love with Johnny anymore, and her friend, smiling throughout the entire thing, says, well, you need to stop doing that. And, like, it's really bad. As I was saying last night as we were watching this movie, this was obviously written by a man, because women do not talk like this.
Nobody in this movie talks like a regular person.
I know.
Yeah, like male or female, they don't talk like humans.
So the friend is sitting on the couch, and Lisa's sitting on the floor next to the couch, and they're talking about how she doesn't love him anymore, and then he walks in. He says, what are you talking about? And she says, nothing, it's girl talk. And then he gets really upset that, you know, you shouldn't keep secrets from me, I'm your future husband. Yeah. And then you're tearing me apart. So it's not even that he finds out that she's actually cheating on him is tearing him apart. The fact that she had girl talk with her friend.
Well, and she's cheating on him with his best friend. At the party, like, they're talking, and he gets really upset, and he pushes him, and he calls him a name, and they start getting this fight, which is immediately broken up. Like, they don't even get, like, into the... And he's like, I'm sorry. Yeah, okay. And he, like, leaves into another room. And then the scene changes to where, at this party with all of his friends, she is legit dancing with this guy, kissing him in front of everybody, and he comes back into the room, and he's like, what is going on here? And
you mean, like, you're talking about the party that we really have no idea when in this time frame it is, because mm-hmm. apparently the party is supposed to be before the wedding and then the birthday, and... There is no time continuity through any of this film.
So, there, yes, exactly. Thank you. Which brings us to the thing that I literally got up from the couch from watching this movie and screamed at the TV. What happens right before this? Because you know what I'm talking about. What happens right before it?
I don't remember the context of the scene just before, but, like, the scene starts off with, I think, Tommy, or no, Denny, the little boy that always
little
invades,
boy who's 20,
invades
their who's 25 and supposed to be adopted.
They say that they're going to adopt him, or that they might as well,
because he likes to
care.
Watch.
What? It's creepy.
That is a line. They're having a pillow fight in bed, and all of a sudden he comes up the stairs, and he gets in bed with them and starts pillow fighting, and they stop, and they look. He's like, hey. And then they're like, what are you doing? He's like, I like to watch you guys. That is legitimately dialogue from this terrible movie. I'm sorry, I went off on a tangent.
So I think, unless if I'm mistaken, Denny is sitting in a chair with... football. And footballs are a recurring theme in this movie.
Peter's sitting in the chair. Or is it Paul? Peter? The psychologist guy.
I don't... Somebody's sitting in a chair.
Denny comes into through the door, followed by Greg behind him. And, yeah, so they're all in tuxes. Denny's only thing he says is your wedding pictures are going to look great. They're all in tuxes. Tuxes that are three sizes too big for every single one of them. And then they say, hey, you want to toss the football around? And the only voice of reason is psychologist. He's like, no, I don't want to.
I'm in a tux.
Yeah. And then they all proceed to call him a chicken and cheep, 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 cheep at him.
Usually when you call someone a chicken, it's no, it's cheep, 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 cheep.
And so they're like,
So he's not a chicken, he's a chick. So they
leave the apartment, and they just show them walking out the door and immediately are in an alley, and they pass the football to all four of them in what is probably the size of a dorm room bedroom, and then he, like, goes long and takes three steps and trips, and they're like, huh, you're such a klutz, and they pick him up and then walk away, and that is the end of the scene. You don't know why. You never find out why. Ever that they're in tuxes.
Because the wedding, that they're supposedly, oh, the wedding photos, you might think that has some feasible timeline. No.
It's over a month away, maybe?
Yeah, the wedding is a month away, and Johnny's party is a week away. And the film ends with Johnny's party for reasons that I won't go into it. So they're getting up in tuxes a month before the wedding for photos, and then they just go play football outside. There is no explanation. It's not that it ever comes back again. Nobody says, oh, hey, how did the wedding photos go? There is no sense of continuity. There's no sense of anything that makes sense from scene to scene.
I mean, not even within scenes. So in their living room, which I think the bedroom is the room. That's never really explained why this is called the room. But in their living room, it's a townhouse, so it's two stories. And so there's this spiraling staircase up to the second floor, which is just the bedroom, because the stairs lead right into the bedroom. And at the beginning of the movie, you see that the front door is on one end and that the stairs are on the other end of the room. And then towards the end of the movie, the stairs are right next to the door. And then in the final scene, you can see the staircase, the top of the stairs in the bedroom, and you can clearly see they go nowhere. They're just built onto the corner of the room, and it's just a banister.
Sort of like the magical garden shed that's at the top of the roof.
The magical garden shed, yes.
Yes, that's on this roof. This is the scene that is probably most prominent from The Disaster Artist. This is a scene that Tommy Wiseau, who wrote it, could not get 67 takes for this one small bit of dialogue. And when I say small, I mean like three sentences. And he could not get it even though he wrote it. And it is this scene right here.
I did not hit her. It's not true. It's bullshit. I did not hit her. I did not. Oh, hi, Mark.
So,
yeah, that right there. Not even his reaction. Just the right up to the, oh, hi, Mark. That is what he could not get.
67 takes.
67 takes.
Mm-hmm.
At the least. That's only
not.
So far as we...
I did not.
That's only so far as we go in the Disaster Artist trailer. The whole thing. If listening to this man's voice has given you any sense of confusion, imagine what it's like to sit down and watch an hour and a half of this nonsense.
Well, and in the first 12 minutes, they have three sex scenes.
Oh my gosh.
Two of which are repeated.
Yes.
So they use one sex scene at the beginning, and then to save on time or the fact that this woman didn't want to be near him naked again, they reuse the exact same scene.
Especially because obviously he has no idea of anatomy. Yes. Just going to throw that out there.
Yeah. If you haven't already, go ahead and just watch some of the Disaster Artist trailers, because you'll get a fair indication of what kind of insanity the movie The Room is. And you'll also find out why Tommy Wiseau is so poor when it comes to his bedroom activities.
Yes.
But you know what? I have to say that, of course, we have not seen The Disaster Artist. It has not been released yet. In the trailers, James Franco is an amazing Tommy Wiseau. Oh my gosh. And we watched the trailer for The Disaster Artist right after we watched The Room last night, because I believe, Chelsea, you hadn't seen the trailer,
right? No, I hadn't.
Isn't it incredible to have watched the movie and then seen just the clip of James Franco? I mean, James Franco and his brother Dave play the two main roles from The Room.
Of Tommy Wiseau and Greg Sestero.
Right, and both of them look exactly like who they're playing. I mean, it is so well done.
Well, that ends that topic, because we got to take a break. But yeah, there's probably, if you ever see us on the streets or something, and you want to talk about it, trust me, we'll have stuff to talk about.
Oh, we will. Yes, we will expand.
Kevin
will elaborate.
We'll see.
All right, we got to take a break. You're listening to We're a Little Behind
on KCNR 1460.
Astronaut Bob the Drop here. There's been a lot of talk about water found on Mars. Why would you go all the way to Mars for water when we have the best tasting water at Mount Shasta? It comes from our protected springs and is delivered right to your door.
Great planning, Bob.
Hey, where are you going with that? Those Martians are stealing my water. Guess we have some new customers. And anyone can get Mount Shasta spring water if they call us at 1-800-922-6227.
Your hand simple. Naturally, the best Mount Shasta spring water.
Hi, I'm Chuck Kinney, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. There's a joke around our company that our propane is better than other companies' propane. The fact is that most propane sold in the North State is manufactured in the same refineries in the Bay Area, so there's really no difference. However, there can be a big difference between propane companies. When you call Shasta Gas, you will be greeted by a friendly, knowledgeable customer service representative that will answer your questions or concerns and even give you an approximate time that your delivery will be there if you need to know. If you want, you can also talk to the owner, me. There may also be a big difference in prices between companies. Our motto at Shasta Gas is our customers are warm friends. So for safety, service, and savings, and to experience this difference, give us a call at 365-3793. That's 365-3793.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Commons Senior Living. I thought it would be fun to have you hear from some of our residents what life is like here at River Commons. I asked Jean, Rosalie, Gordon, and Sherry to share their thoughts.
Living here at River Commons is something I never even imagined or dreamed of. It's sort of like being on a vacation where you don't have to worry about doing anything and you have people taking care of you, looking out for you. The food is like being on a cruise ship, as my daughter puts it.
Home. It feels homey to me. Only better. I don't have to cook. I don't have to clean.
Been here 8 years. It's been fantastic. I've enjoyed every minute of it.
This is my home.
The parties and the activities are great. I love living here. I wouldn't live anyplace else.
Call today and schedule a tour or luncheon a tour and see for yourself why our residents love living here at River Commons. Call 221-2121 or on the web at river-commons.com.
If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all their property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Revolution has started.
Sovereign Minds, now on Sundays, 10 to noon.
And now, back to our show.
Welcome back to We're a Little Behind. I'm Chris Gomez.
And I'm Jen Gomez.
And we had already just got done talking about the movie The Room. That's on true. This episode full of terrible, terrible movies.
Movies we are not thankful for.
And we have a special guest via Skype, Vienna Montague. Like I said earlier, we bonded a lot over the fact that this movie that we're going to talk about called The Wicker Man is absolutely horrible. Am I right?
I think it really cemented the friendship, yes.
Like, there's so many things wrong with this movie, start to finish. I remember when we the first time we saw it, it was close to Halloween. A good friend of mine, Jason Miller, and so he's like, yeah, I'm going to make dinner, we're going to watch these movies. Apparently, The Wicker Man was, according to what he said, a classic horror film, which, by the way, it is not. Yeah.
I know. You know what? It was deemed as, like, a psychological thriller of sorts by people that are trying to trick us, obviously. But
obviously.
It was, no, definitely not. It was one of the only movies, and I like a lot of really stupid movies. It was one of the only movies that during the opening credits, I started glancing up at the ceiling, counting like the popcorn on the ceiling, and I didn't even realize I was doing it until like 3 or 4 minutes later, and I was thinking to myself, wow, it is so bad. Popcorn ceiling is more interesting. Popcorn ceiling in the dark is more interesting than staring at the screen in front of me.
So it starts out with this Irish John Denver wannabe song. It's a very folk song. It's like Irish John Denver. And then you're like, okay, this is weird. And so Edward Woodward plays Sergeant Howie, who is coming to this island because there's a missing girl. But yet no one wants to give him any information.
Yeah, no one on the island seems interested in finding the girl.
And so he's there all by himself. He's a good, God-fearing Christian cop.
This is very important to the storyline.
Exactly. I'm not bringing this up for no reason. He's a God-fearing Christian cop who's going to find the truth.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the point of it. It's almost, yeah. Not quite, but almost sort of a propaganda film in that sense, I feel like.
It is. It's against pagans type of thing. And that's another important part of the film. So there, this girl is missing. And so no one has any recollection of this girl at all. in her whole class, her whole everything. Yet there's documentation of her existing, but yet everyone says that she doesn't. For some unknown reason, he's staying in this pub, and everyone thinks he's stupid and crazy, and kind of he is, but he's a really puritanical
dude. He's a really bad detective, too. So he's searching for this girl throughout this village. There is one scene where he goes into this house.
So he, well, you're skipping the fact that he goes and he tells the entire town, I don't care if you are going to tell me or not. I will search this whole town if I have to, and I'll turn over every rock and look behind every door. Forget search warrants. They apparently don't exist.
Right. So he goes into this house, and there's this room. So he's in this big room, like a living room type thing. He pulls back the curtain, and there's a door. He opens the door, and there's a set of stairs going down into, like, a basement. He kind of peeks his head in and then walks away.
He does not go down
the stairs. He does not go down into the obviously creepy cellar where there is probably a couple of children being, you know, shackled to the pipes. But no, we're not even going to pay attention. We're just going to notice that there's a door behind the curtain. Yeah, no, it looks legit, and walk away.
I think the idea is that it's supposed to be really creepy, but it comes off as so hokey that it's not even... It doesn't work. It just doesn't work.
Or how about...
Although I would argue that the premise would be scary if it were done somehow. You know, a girl goes missing, this whole town doesn't believe she exists. Well, I mean, the end is still stupid, no matter what.
Oh, we'll get to the end. Oh, we'll get to the end. Trust me. And it's been remade with Nicolas Cage in the role, and that was even, maybe even worse.
You know, I argue that that one is actually more entertaining to watch than the original.
It is.
And I don't often say that there is a film that is remade in which Nicolas Cage makes it better, but I would say that this, in particular, it was a bit more entertaining than the original.
Yeah, it was, just because it's so crazy and out there. Like, they took everything that was the Wicker Man, and they're like, you know those parts that were kind of okay? Let's turn those crazy, too.
Exactly. Let's just take it to another level.
And mind you, that is crazy, because the movie that it comes from has a scene where he's in the pub, sleeping in his rented hotel room, motel, just vacant room that he got at the, above the pub. And in the room next to him is the crazy topless bar wench who decides to have this weird tantric dance on the wall.
Yeah, it's like the music starts getting more intense and the drums start playing louder and it's like this hazy, you know, it's just emphasizing the whole pagan thing. But it comes off as crazy because nothing's actually really happening.
So we're going to ruin this ending for you, because if you haven't watched this film masterpiece classic of crap.
Lucky for you.
Yeah. This is, it ends with, it turns out that they needed to sacrifice a virgin to make sure that their crops, because this is a pagan isle, on it every year they sacrifice a virgin.
Yeah, so instead of getting, you know, a child or a chaste teenager, no, we got to get this detective who was like 30 or 40 years old, who is so puritanical Christian that he is still a virgin because, you know, he hasn't found Mrs. Wright yet.
So they lured him here by fake kidnapping a girl who apparently they denied existed, but yet he found out about his missing and then comes to this island, shows up. So they know enough that he's a virgin because they want to sacrifice him.
Mm-hmm.
And so they capture him in their weird clown and animal regalia outfits and costumes. And they capture him and they lead him to this giant wicker man. That's right. It's a man made out of wicker that they are going to sacrifice him. Because the reason they sacrifice...
And it's hollow. Yeah. There's a place to put someone inside.
Yes, it's hollow in his chest area, and there's like pigs and goats and chickens and all the other things inside there that they're also going to sacrifice.
Everything you'd want for your, you know...
for your sacrifice stew roast.
Mm-hmm.
And so the thing is that they've sacrificed and their crops didn't grow the prior year, so they realize what they're doing is not working, so they need him to be the sacrifice so that it will grow. They lead him to this wicker man, and he literally has to climb up these wicker stairs to get inside of the wicker man, which they then close him in. And I can't right now. I'm just trying. But
So on his way up, his leg breaks. So then they put him inside the, is he in the chest area?
Yes, he's in the chest area of the wicker man.
He's in the torso of this man made of wicker. And he's shouting, you know, how dare you, and
I am a man of God.
I am a man of God.
I will not forsake my God for you.
And so they put him in the torso of the man made of wicker, and they light it on fire. And he's holding on to the bars of the door that he's behind.
It's a wicker door.
Right, it's a wicker door.
Do not classify them as bars. That would sound like there was some security to these
doors.
He's
holding on to the...
This whole thing is wicker. That's it.
He's holding on to the vertical strands of wicker that make up the door of his wicker torso cell. And you can tell that he's shaking them and purposefully holding the door shut. Because it's wicker. Kick your way out.
Even with a broken leg.
It's wicker that is now on fire.
Does he break his leg in that one? I don't remember him breaking his leg in that one.
Yeah, they break it because
they break Nicolas Cage's in the remake.
I haven't seen the remake. I've only seen the original.
Okay. Vienna's audibly shaken. But yeah, so then they light it on fire, and he's screaming, how dare you? You can't do this. I'm like,
you were
murdered by products that you could pick up at Pier 1 Import. Like, that is my backyard furniture.
These weren't even, if you think of modern wicker furniture, that actually is a lot more sturdy than what this was, because that had, like, you know, those coatings on it for, like, waterproofing that uses a lot of industrial glue. These are, like, strands of wicker. Straight, like,
this is
you
kindling.
Can break this.
This is something you would make as a one-day structure if you're trapped out in the woods and hope that you can keep the rain off of you.
And it wouldn't work.
It wouldn't work.
It's so flimsy and ridiculous.
It's so flimsy you could see through it to see him inside of it.
He died in vain. He did not need to, because he dies. He does not escape.
He's a martyr.
That's
the whole point of the movie. It's an anti-pagan, pro-Christianity propaganda film disguised as what is supposed to be a horror film. And the only thing scary about it is the acting, the directing, the dialogue, the story, and everything, but not the actual point of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
That is not scary at all. I was not horrified once for what should be a horror movie of being jump scares and monsters. No, I was horrified that this was actually made and that people who are in it are proud of it, including, as Kevin pointed out,
Christopher Lee.
Oh, yeah.
Christopher Lee listed as one of his favorite and most proudest roles he's had.
Well, I mean, to be fair, the man's had more roles than he has.
And that is just so shocking to me. It is just so, like, it makes me, like, feel bad.
As terrible as we find this movie, I think the worst part is that it's considered a classic, and it's considered a beloved horror movie, and it's terrible!
So awful.
The filming of it, angles of filming, like, there's nothing good about this movie. I don't know why the people in it, there's some that went on to do other things, like Edward Woodward. He was in Hot Fuzz.
Which is amazing. Amazing.
And we won't get into that because we're talking about terrible movies. And this is written right near the top. This is a horrible, horrible movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a horror movie, it's just bad.
It's not a horror, it's horrible.
Oh,
exactly.
It's terrible.
There is so many things wrong with this movie, from the beginning and the opening scenes of that terrible music, to the fact that he's a terrible cop, the fact that everyone's lying, and the fact that he just won't go away. Like, honestly, like, there's no... Ugh.
And it's so boring. You know, we talked about The Room earlier, and The Room, while bad, is at least fun to watch. This one is boring.
It is.
Vienna, have you ever watched The Room?
I have not. I have not. I want to, because I want to see the remake spoof for it, and I actually plan on watching it in the next few weeks.
Oh, you have to. It's amazing.
I was a little apprehensive, because I'm like, I can only handle so many Wicker Mans in my life before I feel like I go down a dark road.
It's widely known that The Room is bad. It's along the lines of Plan 9 from Outer Space, done by Ed Wood back in the 1930s.
Which is, I've actually made that comparison, because Plan 9 from Outer Space was made by director Ed Wood, and then they made the movie Ed Wood, starring Johnny Depp as Ed Wood, and the making of Plan 9. And both movies...
And I have seen that.
Yeah. And Ed Wood is an amazing movie itself. And it's beautifully made, and it's a very good story, and it's very entertaining. Plan 9 from Outer Space, while terrible as a movie is still worth watching. And
at least once.
Yeah. And I mean, it's really bad when your main when your star dies during filming and you have to replace him with your dentist because you think his eyes are similar. I mean, it's bad. I would still rather watch that. Like, I don't want to watch Wicker Man again. It was just a bad experience. The Room, I would watch right now if we brought it up.
You don't know how many times, Jen, that Chris has had me rewatch Wicker Man over the years and sharing it with other people.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you refused to come over because we were watching it.
I have, yes. I'm like, I can't. It is that bad. It's almost so bad, it's not worth watching to make fun of or to share with other people. Like, The Ring. Like, you know, like, you've got that VHS, you bury that somewhere, you do not share it. So if you hear this, and anyone who decides to watch Wicker Man, I apologize. It's
you have been warned.
Terrible.
This is in no way, shape, or form us telling you to go watch it. Don't.
Don't.
Just don't. Do not do that at all. You want to watch The Room? Go for it. You know what? Both The Room and Wicker Man both have boobs, so they kind of equal each other out for those teenage boys who are trying to find one of those movies. The Room, actually, yeah, go watch it because you want to start talking like Tommy Wiseau. But you don't want to mimic anything in The Wicker Man.
No, not
you want to take a shower and forget that it was ever happened to you. All right.
I heard one person tell me that they thought The Wicker Man was one of their favorite movies. And I realized that I just didn't want to be friends with someone like that. I didn't need someone like that in my life.
That is the appropriate response.
It was a couple years ago.
That is the appropriate response.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you friends with them now?
No.
There you go. No. And, yeah, the thing is that I've made you watch it a few more times when we show people who haven't seen it because we need to let people know about the evils in the world, and this is one of those.
It's true.
It's really a public service.
And the only person who has the amount of hatred for this movie that I do is you. Like, I remember we watched it.
True.
I remember we watched it, and we talked about it longer than the movie itself. Just for how much we broke that thing down piece, almost frame by frame, of why we hated that movie.
Exactly, because it was so, I almost couldn't tell why I hated it. Just that I hated it so much. Things that were supposed to make you feel uncomfortable did, but not in an appealing way or intriguing at all. It wasn't like an art house film or something. It was literally just boring, and I don't see how it's critically acclaimed by anybody.
All right, we're going to take a break. So far, we've talked about The Room. We've talked about Wicker Man. The next one we're going to talk about after the break is going to be Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the new version produced by Michael Bay. Not the awesome versions from our childhood.
That's right.
Different altogether. All right, so you're listening to We're a Little Behind.
On KCNR, 1460 AM.
Many uninsured Californians don't know they can get financial help for health insurance. To find out if you qualify, visit coverca.com or call 800-300-1506 and keep listening to KCNR 1460. We will be talking to Adam Unger of Cover California on Thursday at 6 p.m. He'll be answering all your health insurance questions and discussing when and how you can register. For more information, visit coverca.com. Cover California. It's more than healthcare, it's life care.
Cold weather is quickly approaching Northern California. Give SST Oil a call today to hear their competitive prices for home heating fuel. Veterans are offered a 5% discount on heater sales and services and a 5% discount on home heating fuels. That's SST Oil. Give them a call at 241-1167. That's 241-1167. SST Oil. SST Oil supports our veteran community.
Everyone's looking for more out of life. But what exactly does more mean, and how and where do we find it? At Shasta College, more is whatever you want it to be. More degree and career options in virtually any field imaginable, from business and technology to healthcare, liberal arts, and beyond. More opportunities. The evolving economy requires well-trained, tech-savvy employees, and salaries are growing as fast as demand. Finally, there's more support. Shasta College is more than just a community college.
College. It's a living, breathing academic community where every student has the chance to connect, be inspired, and achieve their career and life goals. A new semester starts soon at Shasta College, and there's never been a better time to start demanding more. Visit ShastaCollege.edu to browse classes, apply, and register before classes start filling up. There's more for you at Shasta this semester. Come see what we're all about. Shasta College. More possibilities.
NHL star Matt Martin for American Humane.
Hi, I'm Matt Martin, and in all my years of playing professional hockey, I've gotten my share of bruises and injuries. But for many who really put their lives on the line every day, it's not always the injuries you can see that hurt the most. I'm talking about our veterans. Every single day, 184 veterans are diagnosed with post-traumatic stress. And tragically, 20 take their own lives. When medications and therapy don't help, professionally trained service dogs can. American Humane, serving the U.S. military for over 100 years, has put together a free guide to help veterans obtain these life-saving service animals. If you are a veteran or know a veteran struggling with PTS, please go to AmericanHumane.org for this free, downloadable resource. Let's give our veterans the help they need to win their battle.
For more information, visit AmericanHumane.org.
And now, back to our show.
Welcome back to We're a Little Behind. I'm Chris Gomez.
And I'm Jen Gomez.
And we have another special guest in studio with us to talk about our third film, Travis Piggott. Hello. Say hi.
Hello.
There you go.
Travis.
And we are, as promised, going to be talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Not the amazing 1980s cartoon television show. We're not going to talk about the 1990 movie that is fantastic in its big foam suits. No, we're talking about the abortion that of a film that is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from 2014, produced by Michael Bay.
Okay, so let's start by saying that when I was young, I was a huge Turtles fan. Like, huge. I was the only girl in my school with a Ninja Turtle lunchbox, and I was not ashamed. Because
that's commitment.
That show was amazing. I absolutely loved the cartoon. When the movies came out, I was super stoked. And you know what? I don't care. I liked the sequels. And I know the third one is absolute trash, but I loved it anyway.
I loved the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. We actually used to get Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle trading cards. They used to come with a gum. And I had the entire collection of 100 cards. Mm-hmm. They came like 5 to a pack. So that's a lot of quarters that my parents had to put in to get me packs of those trading cards.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember when I first time I saw that good Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie with the suits, I was 8 or 9. I think I was 8, and I lost a tooth. And as a reward for getting from losing the tooth, and I was brave, and my dad took the tooth out, I got to watch the Ninja Turtle movie, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie.
Nice.
And it was, and so it holds a special place in my heart. I love that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2014 comes along. And we get this Michael Bay-produced piece of junk. Now, he didn't direct it, right?
He did not. He was the producer on it. It's directed by Jonathan Liebsman.
Everyone in this has perpetrated a crime.
Yes. Yes, yes. Indeed. It's just, it's so bad. It's so bad. The storyline makes no sense. So, I will grant that some of Michelangelo's lines are funny, because that's his job.
A broken clock is right 2 times a day.
This is correct.
Yeah, some of his lines were funny, but they're also kind of uncomfortably funny at times.
Some of them, yeah.
Yeah, but for the most part, it is clunky, it is terrible. Everything about that movie is terrible.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and begin with one of the origins of the Turtles is a little different in each incarnation of the story.
Sure.
So let's focus on Splinter. In the cartoon from the 80s and the movie from the 90s, he has different origins. So in the cartoon, I believe, he was human.
He was human.
And he was
from Japan.
He was in Japan. He was a sensei. He, you know, did a lot of martial arts there. He had his arch enemy, who was Shredder, and they would always get into fight.
Yeah, he was Hamato Yoshi, and Shredder was Oroko Saki.
There you go. And so they had this long history, you know, this big beef between them.
Yeah, in the cartoon, Shredder was stealing something from the master. Splinter caught him and was then and framed for it. So they sent him and they exiled him to New York, and he was so broke he could only live in the sewers.
Right. He came upon some ooze and some little turtles in the ooze, and he thought, oh, look at these cute little turtles. The ooze turned him into a rat.
Because his last contact was with rats.
With his rats. And then it turned the turtles into teenagers and, you know.
Well, not teenagers, humans.
Right. Well,
humanoids.
Yeah. And so that was...
mutants.
That was the origin there. And then in the 90s movie, Splinter was always a rat and was a pet of the Dojo
Hamada
Master.
Yoshi.
Yeah. And so he saw Shredder murder his master and then escape to the sewers, came in contact with the ooze.
But in the process of it, so Shredder killed Hamada Yoshi.
Right.
And broke the cage in the process, the rat jumped out and shredded Shredder's face. So there is rivalry between the rat that then became mutated into a humanish humanoid rat and Shredder. There's conflict. There was conflict in the cartoon. There's conflict in the movie. They have history between Shredder and Splinter.
Right. And then after he shreds his face, he runs off to the sewers, comes in contact with the ooze, finds the turtles. Everything is good. But in this movie,
they say, hey, you know that? Let's throw it all away and make it make no sense just to be different.
In this movie, April O'Neil visits her father in a lab where he works, and they're doing experiments on turtles and on rats. And so she likes to videotape the turtles and the rats. And then something happens. The bad guy of the movie causes destruction in the lab. Everything's going up in flames. But
those animals are part of Project Renaissance.
Right, right. So April scoops them all up and takes them outside and puts them in the sewers. And that's where they grow because they were subjects of these testing. Splinter finds a karate book, teaches himself karate, and then teaches the turtles karate. But he's learning it at the same time, so what makes him the master? And at this point now, he's never come in contact with Shredder. He has no beef.
Yeah, he was a rat at the same time the turtles were turtles. But for some reason, he's much older. And he's a New York rat, voiced by a Lebanese actor, Tony Shalhoub, who for some reason sounds super Asian. It's almost stereotypical, and I'm like, you're a rat from New York. Why do you sound like this?
And he looks like a fish.
He does look like a fish. Now, we watched it recently with Travis. Had you seen it before?
Yeah, I did when it came out.
And what did you think?
It was horrible.
It's terrible. Oh, it's just... Yeah. So, it continues on getting worse. So, the Shredder gets a new mech suit, basically, from the rich guy. He breaks into the sewer, and him and the rat have this obvious feud, this battle. They know each other's name and everything. I'm like, how? There is no setup process for this at all. They have a pointless feud that is never explained.
Yeah, there's no reason for them to be fighting. And Shredder actually comments on, you know, the rat, and he talks to the rat. Why do you care about this rat?
Right, because earlier on, the rat is in the lab with the bad guy, that's the rich bad guy, not Shredder. Shredder is never involved with this rat at all.
Yeah, no. And apparently Shredder is... he was a mentor to the rich bad guy. I don't even remember what this guy's name is, because he was just so...
It was Jax. Jax Industries?
Sachs. Eric Sachs, yeah. So he apparently traveled to Japan and studied under Shredder.
Yeah, but he never has it. So that right there, that is just the iceberg, the tip of the iceberg of this terribleness. Because then you get into the fighting and the logistics of this movie. So basically the bad guy, the rich bad guy, wants the turtles because they are the last bit of the mutagen that they created. And so basically, here's the quickest rundown I can. He is developing a poisonous gas that is going to kill everyone, and he has the bomb of this gas on the top of his tower that's going to explode and get everyone infected. Well, he wants the turtles because the ooze that's coursing through their blood is the thing that he can do to make an antidote. And why does he want the antidote if he's the one killing everybody? Because he wants to sell it to the government to become rich. And I mean stupid rich.
Actual quote from the movie.
That is an actual quote from the movie. He's already so rich that he has a tower. He has millions and millions of dollars. He has a lab on a mountain fortress, which, by the way, we will get into it momentarily. He has a lab, but he needs their ooze to get an antidote to become stupid rich.
Yeah. Worst reason for villainy ever.
I wouldn't mind maniacal, crazy insanity. That's fine. This is just, you're rich trying to become richer?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's there. So the turtles are taken to this mountaintop fortress lab, which, by the way, this takes place in New York. It's obviously it's New York. It's blatant it's in New York.
So they say it's New York.
Yes. They show a skyline of New York. There is no mountain this tall anywhere in that skyline. But for some reason, there is a mountain in the middle of New York that is harboring this guy's compound of evil.
Mm-hmm.
And so the turtles are kidnapped and taken for their mutagen. Three of them are Michelangelo, Donatello, and Leonardo. Raphael, they thought, was dead, so they just left him there, but he wasn't. So he comes back and frees them. And all of a sudden, the bad guys have these machine guns, and they fire on the Ninja Turtles, and guess what?
They're bulletproof.
Where? When did this happen? When?
And I like that they didn't know they were bulletproof, but when they were shot, they said, hey, we're bulletproof.
And I'm going to give you that the shells may be tough. They're mutants. Maybe their shells are tough. They literally have a scene where he turns around and gets shot by the bullets and does the thing where he flexes and then pops all the bullets back out at them.
Yeah.
This is a thing.
This is a thing.
So in the original comic books, which are really a lot darker, and in the cartoons, the turtles are a lot shorter. They're just teenage turtles who know ninja skills.
Mm-hmm.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. They're about 4 foot tall. In this movie, they are over 6 feet tall. They are ginormous monsters who somehow have bigger superpowers than anything in the DC or Marvel universe. Shredder takes off in a helicopter during this battle. A helicopter. I'd like to point out that the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. You can't get further and shorter straight distance than in a helicopter going from a mountain to a tower.
Yeah, but what if you're skiing?
No. But they like to think so. So they escape, then leave, and are being chased down this mountain by these, like, big trucks. And they're, like, sliding down this mountain. This mountain scene of them sliding down takes easily 8 minutes.
Oh, yeah. It's a very tall mountain.
It's a very tall mountain. It's like they're falling down Everest. It just keeps going and going and going and going. And where do they land? They land at the bottom of the mountain where there is an emergency entry point to the sewers.
Yep.
Which is the shortest distance to the tower. And under the sewers, by the way, it's actually water slides.
Oh, yeah. So the underworld of New York City looks really fun because it's just an interconnected web of
water slides.
So, hey, let's go to New York and slide in the sewers. It looks amazing.
So it takes about eight minutes sliding straight down a mountain, directly into the entry point of the sewer, and then water slide down, which is exactly enough time to be quicker than a helicopter to the tower.
Mm-hmm. Yep, because they beat him there.
Yep. And he's up there, and so he gets up there to the top. So they take the elevator, and of course he reaches the top, because he's in a helicopter, which the helicopter then goes away. They must have just dropped him off like, see ya.
Hmm.
But they get to the elevator, they get to the top. So he's up there Shredder is trying to make the bomb go off. And of course, there's always a timer on bombs. You can't just be like, done. And so they get up there, they fight him. And then Shredder hits a weak point in the tower. This tower has got to be easily 10 stories tall.
Oh, yeah.
Or more. It could be maybe 20 stories. It's a huge metal tower. To which, if it falls over, the city's destroyed. Well, what do? They go stand under it and hold it up. Yes, that's right. 4 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles have enough superpower to hold up a tower.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it is pushed over, not because it just gets unbalanced, they then go with it. They fight on this tower, and they battle Shredder on the tower, and then the thing falls. And for some reason, as they're falling, this is really getting me. I get really upset.
He really wants to pace right now, but he has to be at the microphone.
They are literally falling in slow motion as Raphael is talking at normal speed. And then all of a sudden, it stops. So, they land.
So they're holding on to this thing that makes it look like a giant carnival ride. What you left out, though, is that April is also holding on to this thing as it falls and spins and twists and turns. And she's just fine, too, because, what, does she have superpowers as well?
All of a sudden, it just stops, and they look down, and their, like, feet are dangling from this, from the structure. And they landed, like, feet down and a couple inches there. It didn't show how. The impact alone should have caused damage.
Yes.
Especially to April. April should have been dead from that.
April absolutely would have died from all this.
Like, they didn't even try to even come up with an explanation as to why they landed. Like, oh, there was some air that caught this, or, you know, it caught on the way, and it, luckily it got caught. Like, at least with Spider-Man, he, like, shoots the webs, and it's like, okay, it's springy, whatever. No, they don't even address it. They just stop.
Mm-hmm.
And they literally go, oh, we survived. That is literally dialogue from the gosh dang movie.
It is. It's terrible.
Is there anything that I'm missing from this, Travis? Like,
it's all pretty terrible. The only good thing about the movie is if you can appreciate violence and action, it has that.
It does. It does have that.
If you ignore everything else about the story and what they did, then you can at least like that part.
And believe it or not, this was supposed to be, this could have been worse.
Yeah, in the original screenplay, they were aliens from Dimension X, which, if you're playing along, is in the original story, but that's where
Krang
is from.
Yeah, the
not
brain,
the turtle,
the living brain who actually comes from Dimension X and is in the sequel.
Mm-hmm.
The sequel to this movie is actually better than this one.
It really is, which is crazy. But, you know, so we saw this movie in the theater when it came out, because of course we did.
And we hated it so much.
We hated it so much.
We couldn't decide how they would make a sequel to this. So we thought we would torture ourselves and see. And the second one is not great. Let me stipulate that. It is not great. It is not even very good. It is just better than the atrocity that is the first one.
It's much better.
Although, getting Brad Garrett to voice the brain felt really weird.
Very odd choice.
Yeah, I didn't like that at all.
Yeah, no.
Well, that's it for our show. I'd like to thank all of our guests for this episode. We had Kevin Shoemaker and Chelsea Dwinell. We had Vienna Montague. And we have Travis Pickett. So thanks, everyone, for a great show. And we will see you next time here on We're a Little Behind on KCNR 1460 AM.
Good night.
KCNR, Shasta, Redding.
Breaking news this hour from townhall.com. I'm Keith Peters. The Trump administration is calling on Iran to stop blocking some popular social media sites amid ongoing street protests.
The U.S. says Instagram, Telegram, and other platforms are legitimate avenues for communication, and it wants Iran to open them. In the meantime, Undersecretary of State Steve Goldstein says the U.S. is encouraging Iranians to use VPNs, virtual private networks, to access blocked sites. He says America is still communicating with